Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4 by 5. Color, black and white, high speed black and white. But you know what's even cooler? They have the Instax cameras and film. The Instax Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instax Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instax Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5 for the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out. www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet, or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output, but they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high-resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain-free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And, of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. The camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group. The place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks. The community for analog photography, www.apug.org. And of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org. The place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in their museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it, they have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. On this week's Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Dresden Engel. She's the public relations manager with George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film. We're going to be talking with Dresden about an overview of the George Eastman House, what they're up to, what their mission is, and how things are going there. Dresden, how you doing today?
Hello, Scott. Good to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on today talking about George Eastman House, this institution that is just the place about photography. You guys have been around for many decades. I want to talk today about what's going on with George Eastman House or an overview so people can understand what you guys are about and how are things there in beautiful Rochester.
Things are actually quite beautiful in Rochester. The leaves are changing. Everything is gorgeous. And I'm going to give a little plug to George Eastman right off the top. George Eastman wanted Rochester to be the best city in which to live, work, and play. As a result, he, as a philanthropist, put a lot of money into the city. And that's why, as a medium-sized city, we're very rich in culture and business and education and healthcare. So thank you, George Eastman, for many things.
Well, yeah, I mean, Rochester was, for many, many decades, I think probably over 100 years, a center of photography.
Yeah, well, I like the sound of that. 1880 is the year that Eastman started the Eastman Dry Plate Company, so Kodak traces its founding back to 1880. You can think back even to the 70s. Rochester Institute of Technology, Visual Studies Workshop, George Eastman House. If you were interested in education in the world of photography, you came to Rochester. I mean, I'm generalizing, but this is true for so many of the educators still out there in the world teaching the current generation and the next generation about photography. So photography in Rochester have been synonymous even beyond the Kodak and Eastman legacy.
So let's talk about George Eastman himself and this house and how all the stuff came together, because George Eastman House is really George Eastman's house.
Exactly, hence the name and the title. And a lot of people have said to us in the past, oh, you should just have it be the Eastman Museum. But we are, in fact, an historic house, in addition to the many other things we are that we're going to talk about. George Eastman's house is a mansion, not as grand as he could have built, considering his wealth, that he built and moved in 1905 and lived here till his death in 1932 at age 77. He bought the land in 1902. It's kind of like the Brownie camera. The success of the Brownie camera proved that he was off and running, and he goes to build his house. He lived here till 32, gave the home to the University of Rochester to be a home for the presidents for 10 years. Then a little something happened in the 40s called World War II and delayed things. In 1947, it was decided by the community, the university, Kodak, etc., that this should be a museum of photography. And 2 years later, the doors opened. Guess when? Exactly 60 years ago, November of 1949.
Wow, 60th anniversary. Pretty cool.
60th anniversary, yes, and right now, the timing, it's right around the corner. And the world's oldest museum of photography. We're pretty proud of that. When other folks weren't celebrating photography as art, we were. When other folks weren't saving nitrate and motion pictures and silent films, we were collecting cameras, etc. So we're pretty proud of our collections, our preservation efforts, and they continue today. We even had a reputation upon our opening. Some minor folks happened to attend that ribbon cutting, which of course they cut film, on opening day in 49. Ansel Adams, Edward Steichen, Mary Pickford, I'm name dropping here. But even when we opened, it was realized it was a big deal to have a museum that celebrated photography.
What was the original thought behind doing the museum itself? So you guys are doing still photography and motion picture, and the motion picture archive is huge.
Motion picture archive is huge. It's interesting, a lot of people on the west coast of the U.S. know us for our motion picture archive and our film preservation efforts. I'm generalizing, but a lot of folks on the east coast know us more as a photography museum. And in Rochester, we're more known as being an historic house. So it's just interesting how many different museums we are. What we are doing is celebrating the legacy of George Eastman. So, of course, the home, who the man was, industrialist, inventor, philanthropist, we celebrate him here every day. We also celebrate photography. That's obvious. A lot of folks don't understand Eastman's legacy in motion pictures. So if I take you back a little bit to the Eastman Dry Plate Company of 1880, we have actually on view right now in one of our galleries the first photo George Eastman ever took. He's 23 years old. It's 1877. He's in downtown Rochester on Main Street. And there was actually a business on the bridge, and he purchased his wet plate outfit. We have the receipt, $49.58. So $50 back in 1877 was an incredible amount of money. It weighed about 50 pounds, so this is quite a tedious effort. And just that one snap, and frankly, not a very good photo. He was taking a photograph of the river and the riverbanks and things that are still there. Some of the buildings are still there. The bridge is still there. The stone walls are still there. And, of course, the river is still there. So that's exciting for me to look at, to see George Eastman's photo. He said, are you kidding me? There's got to be an easier way. So starting in 1877, this started him on his lifelong journey. He knew what they were doing with dry plates in Europe, and he just tried to find an easier way, working as a bank clerk by day and practicing in his mom's kitchen at night with different processes and emulsions, even using mom's cookie sheets. Ultimately, then in 1880, he was able to get support for his company. And fast forward through some patents in the 1880s, the Walker roll holder, dry plates. In 1888, voila, the Kodak camera that changed it all with the slogan. Can you give it to me, Scott?
No, you tell it.
Slogan of the Kodak. You press the button, we do the rest.
There you go.
He had to explain to folks, how do you take a photograph? You don't just go to a studio and sit down anymore. You can take one yourself. Of course, if you're very rich, because it was $25 at the time, which was about 6 weeks urban wages. Another $10 for processing. But what was really cool about the Kodak, you took 100 exposures, you put it back in a wooden box, wherever you were in the world, and this box went back to Rochester, New York. The photographs were processed, and you were sent back for your $10 processing fee, your camera reloaded, and your prints. That was a lot of fun, and hence, you press the button, we do the rest. Also, what happened here is the name Kodak was born. Eastman simply made it up. You knew that, right?
No, I was going to ask you about that. How did the name Kodak, because George Eastman, and you have Eastman Kodak Company and the Eastman House, but how did this word Kodak come about?
Well, you press the button, we do the rest. I mean, he worked with an advertising agency to help him with that, but he truly was a marketing genius. He knew he had to have a name that would be pronounceable in all languages for marketing and patent purposes, and he set out to find this word. And so he sat down with his mom, with whom he was very close. Her name is Mariah, spelled like Maria, Kilborn Eastman. So they used the K from her maiden name, and he was interviewed about this. Many people speculate it's the click of the camera, the Kodiak Bear, etc. He was alive many, many years after 1888 and did a lot of interviews. So we have first-hand interviews explaining why he named Kodak the name he did. He said it was a strong, decisive consonant. So he took the K and he put it as the bookends of a word, played around with an anagram game like Scrabble with his mom, and they came up with Kodak. He immediately had it patented in more than one country and pushed that name. That's why you don't know the name George Eastman the way you do many of the other philanthropists and industrialists of the era, because he pushed the name Kodak so much. He wanted photographers to be called Kodakers. He wanted the verb to be Kodaking. He pushed that name Kodak, so he purposely made himself a little less known in history by everyone knowing his company name.
Wow, very interesting, really.
And then ultimately changed the name in 1892 to the Eastman Kodak Company. And of course, that's still the name of the company with its world headquarters still in Rochester today. So continuing with the motion picture legacy, how does this all fit in? So following the 1888 Kodak, the same time Thomas Edison was making his movie machines and needed exactly what Eastman had, the long strips of quality film. And so Eastman and Kodak, they adapted the film from the Kodak camera for Thomas Edison's movie machines. So within a year, he was able to provide Thomas Edison with the film he needed. We do call George Eastman the father of popular photography, but also motion picture film. But you can't leave Edison out of the equation when you tell the story, because it was in tandem with Edison's work at the time as well. And I hope I can say this over the show, but the folklore is, according to old Kodak press releases, is when Edison got his hands on this film, he held it up to his men at his factory and said, "Gentlemen, now we have it, work like hell." Whether they're true or not, I love these stories. And then through the 1890s, X-ray film and many other adaptions from the Kodak camera and the film that it brought with it. But in 1900, voila, the Brownie. And that's truly the birth of mass photography, because folks could afford this camera. It was a dollar. Processing was an additional 40 cents, but film was only 15 cents to purchase. So that would be about $20 today to buy a Brownie camera. And Eastman marketed it to women and children. He knew the women were going to take the pictures. He knew children were the future of photography. He even chose an Elfin storybook character created by a Canadian author by the name of Palmer Cox to be the logo on the box for the Brownie and the name, because these characters were called Brownies. And he knew that children were the future of photography and even used them in ads. His Brownie ads would say, "Can be used by any schoolboy or girl," and would use children in the advertisements holding the camera, trying to show how easy it was. So you're getting the idea of this genius marketer thread of George Eastman. He really was always thinking that was the future of photography. So the mass photography was born in 1900 with the Brownie camera.
So moving forward to when they opened the museum in 1949, actually November the 9th, 1949, who put together the museum itself? Was this done by community board? Was it done by Eastman Kodak? I mean, who put together the actual house and the idea of keeping this photography alive and doing restoration work and preservation and all this stuff?
The University of Rochester, since it was bequeathed to them, they were at the table. Very much Kodak was at the table. I mean, we're only talking 15 years after Eastman has died. So there are people still working at Kodak who worked for Eastman and that were close to him. So preserving his legacy and his home was very much important to them in their minds and their hearts. So the community was at the table, as well as University of Rochester and Kodak. The first curator and ultimately director was Beaumont Newhall, the name we all know in photography history. And our first motion picture curator was James Card, who remained curator into the 70s. And these gentlemen were very much groundbreaking in what they developed. So they were empowered by this board, primarily made up of Kodak executives, to set the standard for what does a motion picture and photography museum contain, collect, preserve. And thus it began. And in many ways, you could call the collection a collection of collections, because we ultimately received some collections. We received the famous Cromer collection of European artifacts from Kodak as a gift to get started. So the archives were not George Eastman's personal artifacts. A lot of people think that. You thought maybe he was a very large collector himself, but that's not the case. We definitely have a lot of his artifacts here at the museum, his correspondence with world leaders, Booker T. Washington, because George Eastman gave a large amount of his fortune to African-American education. There's so many facets to this man, but as far as the collections of camera and library materials and photography and film, we really needed to start from scratch and just start collecting it all, dating back to the birth of photography. Jumping ahead, okay, so what do you have there? Well, we have a Giroux Daguerre camera signed by Daguerre. We have a daguerreotype from 1839. We have a daguerreotype of Daguerre himself from 1840. So he's going back to the very beginning, a camera obscura even prior to that. So from the very beginning of motion pictures, our first film of motion pictures dates to 1894. That's the birth of that. So from the very beginning, we just started at the beginning and kept collecting. We still collect today. We very much still acquire at George Eastman House a lot of contemporary photography, digital, the latest digital cameras. So right up till 2009, we are still collecting here at George Eastman House.
So you guys are still collecting and acquiring current photography gear that's being produced?
By all means, our relationships with the Leica folks and many of the other manufacturers, they're very proud to have their artifacts housed here. When it comes to motion pictures, we have relationships with the studios. When it comes to filmmakers, Martin Scorsese chooses our motion picture archive of any of the other ones in the world to store his personal collection of 8,000 titles. Of course, with a number like that, you realize that's not just the films he makes himself, but his titles he collects. He's a collector, and here they come to Rochester because he trusts us to take care of his collection. So we're the third largest motion picture archive in the world. We are behind UCLA in the Library of Congress and about the same size as Museum of Modern Art. But we also have, in addition to that, at George Eastman House is the L. Jeffrey Selznick School of Film Preservation. It was founded in 1996. If you're a motion picture person, you might recognize that Selznick name. And yes, L. Jeffrey Selznick was the son of David O. Selznick of Gone with the Wind fame and many other MGM classics. And he helped us start the school, and we've graduated 15 classes since. The first of its kind in the world, a permanent school of film preservation where you actually work with a collection. And students come from all over the world to study at the L. Jeffrey Selznick School of Film Preservation, a one-year certificate program or a two-year program where you get a master's degree from the University of Rochester. We have another master's degree program here at George Eastman House that we do in conjunction with Ryerson University in Toronto. And that is a master's degree in collections management and photograph preservation. We just completed a 10-year program at an advanced residency program in photograph conservation that was funded by the Mellon Foundation, and that sprinkled the world with expert photoconservationists. 10 years ago, the Mellon Foundation realized that photography wasn't being preserved in archives and museums and libraries the way it should be, that it was really just being lumped in with the paper collections. So photography, now we realize that we truly need to study the paper, the processes, the chemicals, the emulsions, what are going to be the results in the future if we house them in this case, etc. And so for 10 years, five different two-year cycles, the fellows came here to George Eastman House to study that. And now they've gone back to their prospective countries, some in the U.S. and others, Asia and Europe, across the world, and are now educating their countries on how best to preserve photography. So it's interesting how this program now may change how photography is saved, definitely the rest of our lives.
It is very interesting. Let's chat about the preservation and the archivalness of what you guys are doing with the actual still photography itself. Now, you are still acquiring photography. How does that work with people submitting stuff? Do you request things? How do people get work into the Eastman collection?
Yes, all of the above. We are very fortunate that folks will make donations, all kinds of ways that those donations happen. For example, Michael Feinstein, the musician, he collects Gershwin materials. And anything he finds photographic while he's collecting across the world any Gershwin artifacts, he donates to George Eastman House. That's just one example. Photographers will pass away, and through their executors or they bequeath these estates themselves, their estates come here. The most recent estate we just received was a Rochester-based photographer by the name of Roger Merton, and we just received his estate. Within my time here, and I've been here at George Eastman House 12 years, we've received the full Edward Steichen estate, bequeathed it through his widow, Joanna Steichen. So we have the Steichen estate here. Over the years, we have the Coburn estate. So this is the place where folks come, the Lewis Hine estate. So this is where folks go if they want to do research or gather up research materials, do some scholarly research on how these photographs were housed, signed. We have a website that we have just launched. It's actually a photo wiki by the name of Notes on Photographs. and you can access this through our website, eastmanhouse.org. What we're doing there is Ansel Adams, for example. How did he stamp his photographs? We're showing you the front of the photo. We're showing you the back of the photo. This is not only important for research and dating photographs, but it also obviously helps with any forgeries that might be out there. Same thing with Lewis Hine photographs. How did he sign them? How did he stamp them? So there's just a lot of different ways to look at the photograph as object now. Now that photography is finally being celebrated as art and photographs are being sold for $1 million, that we are now looking at them as object to make sure that they're preserved, but also realizing there's different ways that we can do the research. And what's exciting is we hope to be doing more interviews with Eastman House staff. I represent the museum as a spokesperson, but I'm by far not the expert here. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by world experts in photography and motion pictures. So you can go into depth a lot more when you speak with them, Scott. So I look forward to you asking those questions so your listeners can learn even far more in depth. I'm barely scratching the surface here of all the work that we're doing behind the scenes.
Well, no, I mean, you guys have so much stuff going on. You have programs that are teaching historic processes to conservators. And I mean, there's just so much stuff going on in Eastman House. It's unbelievable.
You have to learn the process in order to know how to preserve it. You need to maybe understand how the paper has changed over decades upon decades in order to preserve the photograph, know if you have an authentic photograph. So there's so many layers to it, figuratively and literally. Like I said, how lucky am I to be a public relations person and be surrounded by these world experts here at George Eastman House? Motion pictures, photography, our library, the gems in the library are just astounding. I mean, from the Pencil of Nature by Talbot to the Daguerrean Journal by Daguerre to, you know, the full complete set of camera work. It's just very exciting that everywhere you turn at Eastman House, you have access to these collections. You can come and see anything in our archives that you want to see. You just simply need to call us up. Obviously, travel to Rochester, but call us up and we will make an appointment and you can see what we have in our archives. As a public institution, that's what we do. We're frantically digitizing and trying to make as much possible as we can online to share with the world. We have a selection on the Flickr Commons, the Commons at Flickr, selection of our archives that you can have some fun looking at. Through our website, you can look at thousands of images from our collection. And actually, we're very proud. Just this month, we launched a book called Camera, easy enough, : The History of Photography from Daguerreotype to Digital. It's really the first book that has taken the history of photography by looking at cameras and illustrating the book with the photographs that were either taken by that model or that very camera. In the case of the Joe Rosenthal Speed Graphic, it's the actual camera that shot the flag raising at Iwo Jima. It's the actual Stieglitz camera that shot that photograph of George O'Keefe's hands. And these are the kind of things we have in our collection that's so exciting. It's the Coburn camera that shot the octopus. And in other cases, maybe we don't have the photograph it took, but we have Ansel Adams' first two cameras that he personally gave the museum. So this book is very exciting because the buzz is huge. Folks are getting very excited to snatch it up. It's available at Amazon.com. We just launched it. It's kind of hard to tell the history of photography or the camera without marrying the two.
No, that's a great book to be able, like you said, to have the original camera, and then here's the photo that it took. It's a pretty neat book, really.
Yeah, I mean, Nicholas Murray and the photograph he took of Marilyn Monroe. I mean, I could go on and on. But it's fun to check it out online and get an idea of what that book offers. It's just a sampling of what we have here at the collection at George Eastman House.
So let's talk about the facilities. You have the original George Eastman House itself that you guys do tours. There's an upstairs thing that's different. There's some pretty neat stuff going on there. Then there's other buildings that have been built on the property, underground storage vaults. I mean, you have a pretty wide range, and then, of course, you have the theater.
Yeah, so it's a 12-acre estate. Eastman purchases the last bit of farmland in the city of Rochester in 1902, and it's so frugal, he takes the wood from that 7-room farmhouse and builds his barn that's still standing today. I love that about him. So we have the 12-acre estate, and Eastman builds a 35,000-square-foot mansion that he moves into in 1905, 50-room mansion. This is a National Historic Landmark house surrounded by 5 formal gardens. Fewer than 3% of all historic properties are deemed National Historic Landmarks in the United States. In Rochester, we have 2. We have Susan B. Anthony's house, the famous suffragette, and George Eastman's house. Beyond it just being a National Historic Landmark, we've added modern archives to the house in the area of the acreage where George Eastman had his farmlands and his croplands, so we didn't disturb any of the formal gardens. So that's where we have our galleries and our archive space now. With the house being historic and with having only so much acreage to work with, you have to have a parking lot for the visitors, too. We had to go down 3 stories. So, Scott, when you visited, you know what it was like to go down, down, down into the archives of George Eastman House. And it kind of helps with our climate control vaults to already be underground. But we do keep all of our vaults at climate control, humidity, Fahrenheit. For example, the motion picture archive is at 40 degrees Fahrenheit, 30% humidity. So we're very careful about how we're storing these artifacts. And what's interesting, that building is 20 years old. So it's been 20 years now since we added the modern facilities onto the historic house. In 1950, George Eastman's niece, he didn't marry, but he was very close to his sister's children. So Ellen Dryden was like the daughter he never had. She gave us the money to build a 500-seat movie theater that just very nicely just fit right into the original estate plan to celebrate Eastman's legacy in motion pictures. And every day we still show movies in that theater. We just showed George Eastman House restored with Museum of Modern Art, Robin Hood, starring Douglas Fairbanks with an 11-piece orchestra. We just screened that. Magical, magical things that happen here. And it was an incredible experience because truly silent films were really never silent. There was always some kind of music being played. We're going to be doing an 80s series to celebrate the films of John Hughes as well as the musicals of Vincent Minnelli. So such a variety of different films and many visiting artists. We've given awards to many folks. Jessica Lang was most recently here. We honored her with an award for her work in photography as well as motion pictures. So the Dryden Theater is a great asset to the museum to showcase our motion pictures and also celebrate a lot of visiting artists who do come to the museum.
Dresden, let's talk about, I think something very important here is membership with the museum. How people can get involved if you live in Rochester, if you're not in Rochester, you have different levels of support. Let's talk about how people would help support this type of institution.
We are an independent nonprofit museum. We have been independent always. Kodak was our largest supporter at one time, and even though they're still a corporate supporter, they're not even our largest supporter. The Mellon Foundation has been our largest monetary supporter in recent years, for example, as well as the Packard Foundation and many others. So we have always been an independent museum since we opened our doors 60 years ago. We have affiliations with other universities for our programs. So you mentioned RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology. We worked with Rochester Institute of Technology for the Advanced Residency Program in Photograph Conservation that was supported by the Mellon Foundation for the last 10 years for fellowship programs in photograph conservation. We also have worked for our educational programs with the University of Rochester and Ryerson University. But George Eastman House has always been an independent museum, and it's interesting because we get called the Kodak House many times. And I guess that's a credit to George Eastman wanting to push the name Kodak so much in his marketing, that folks just assume George Eastman, it must mean Kodak. We're very proud to tell Kodak's history here. We have Kodak's camera collection, their entire patent collection of cameras. We have George Eastman's personal business papers, all his Kodak patents. We also have the Kodak advertising collection paper. The paper version of the Kodak advertising collection. We're very proud to keep Kodak's history here at George Eastman House. It makes a lot of sense that it's here at our museum, but we have always been an independent museum.
Besides having all this Kodak gear, you also have film and photographs that were acquired other than Kodak film. So it's not just Kodak.
Right, it's actually a small portion of the collection. If you look at the numbers, we have more than 4 million artifacts in the collection. So if you look at what we have, the Kodak portion, although very important to the history of imaging, it's a small in number compared to collecting the rest of the world. So we have always been the world's photography museum. We launch podcasts, blogs, obviously online, website, and digitization, so folks can enjoy our collections worldwide without having to come to Rochester. Now, we have many international members of George Eastman House, even if they don't live in Rochester. The way to support the museum, you still get our mailings. You still can be in touch with us. We let you know when we've posted a latest blog. For example, one blog that comes to mind was our motion picture curator, Ed Stratman, posted a blog about, hey, guess what? The negatives we've preserved at Eastman House for decades, the original nitrate negatives to The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, have just been shipped off to Warner Brothers so they can make high-res scans for the new HD, DVD, and Blu-ray set. It's for sale now in time for the holidays, The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, as they celebrate their 70th anniversaries. And it's because of the preservation work we've done at Eastman House that these negatives have stayed so pristine. And it's interesting that you go back to the original source material. I don't need to tell your listeners that the original source material and the negatives are the best archival material that you can use. And that proves the case. They're not going back to a scan that they made for the DVD for Wizard of Oz 10 years ago. They are going back to the original negatives and rescanning from the original to get the best possible image. And that's what's very important about saving these artifacts. We don't know how to preserve digital. Our experts on staff will tell you that we do not know how to preserve digital, but we do know how to preserve film.
Well, I think the thing is, too, I mean, and they're still shooting motion pictures and on film, and like you said, you can have a negative that's 100 years old or 10 weeks old or an hour old, but in 10 years from now, the scanner technology will be better. Like you said, they rescan Gone with the Wind and these other films, and they have a better copy than they did even 10 years ago, but they still have the original negative. So it just goes to show you the archivability of film and what you guys are doing and teaching people how to preserve film so it doesn't deteriorate, the correct way to store it, and all this other stuff that's going on.
That's right, and especially since we know now how to preserve it, and we have for decades, we can do just that. We don't know the life of a CD. They think 6 years is the most lifespan on a CD. And even filmmakers who are known for shooting digital, like George Lucas, he still puts it back on film in order to put it into an archive to save it. So even those who are shooting on digital, if they have the means and they want it preserved, they're putting it back on film to preserve it.
So what different levels of membership do you have that people can get involved? I know that there is a in-town one, because if you're in town, there's a lot of things going on. Lots of public displays of photography. You have the theater. There's a lot of things going, but then you also have like an out-of-town membership too.
We do have an out-of-town membership. We have a scholarly journal that we have put out for decades called Image, and that's exclusive to our members of George Eastman House. And many of our international members are members just to receive Image magazine. We also send you our other materials, our newsletter, and so forth. But it truly comes down to more just knowing you're supporting the efforts of George Eastman House and what am I going to get out of it. We are working on some online ventures that would only be for our international members who can't have the benefit of actually coming here for free on a regular basis. So stay tuned. That's something we're working on that would be exclusive just to our members. They would have added benefits and be able to have increased insight into the collections to thank them for being members of the museum.
But you can join now as an out-of-town member. I think it's very economically priced to become a member of the Eastman House International Film and Photography Museum. What's the cost to get involved if you want to be a member?
Anywhere between $40 and $100 for an individual or family membership all the way up. So when you look at it overall for a nonprofit donation, you're right, it is economical, and I appreciate you saying that. And to know that you helped save a film or used to help save a photograph in the process, that's got to feel pretty good.
Right, and people don't understand. I mean, so let's say if you want to see some Steichen work, like you said, you can put a request in and actually look at the stuff firsthand.
You sure can. It's pretty fabulous to walk by and see researchers at tables with these boxes of candy in front of them. Obviously, not really candy in the archives, but you know what I mean. Put on the white gloves and they can actually touch the photograph and see Steichen's signature, see Ansel Adams' signature right there. Or it could just be something you've never seen before. Maybe you never have seen a Victorian photo album. So you come to Eastman House and you want to see that firsthand, because you kind of need to touch that. You know, you need to actually see that in person, that 3D artifact. Or you really want to see that camera that you saw in the book that George Eastman House has just published. You need to see that in person. Well, we can make that happen for you. As like you said, as a public institution, this is what we do. We want to share our artifacts with the world, educate. And so if you're fortunate enough to be in beautiful Rochester, New York, we want you to see even more than that.
No, I mean, it's incredible, and it's such an overwhelming experience to go there. I mean, you can see the Hasselblad that was on the moon. I mean, you have so much stuff that goes on, and if you really know what's there, you can actually request a look at things. I mean, you can see 8x10 Kodachrome from the 40s, from the 50s, that nobody's ever even seen. You guys have them.
I think I recall you gasping when the archivist took out for you, because you requested Kodachrome. So someone else may come and request something else that's a favorite of theirs. When it was the Nicholas Mirai advertising photograph.
Yeah.
And the colors were just so incredibly lush. I think you gasped. I think I heard. So that's the experience of being able to see it firsthand. I remember the editor of Popular Photography at the time, John Owens, he came here, and his column in the next issue was, if you have never seen an authentic photograph in person, you have to get to George Eastman House, because there is nothing like it. Because we have these archives, let's use Lewis Hine as an example. He didn't just take the photograph and, in the field, delete all the other photographs. They were filmed. So we have, quote-unquote, outtakes of the famous powerhouse mechanic. Can you conjure that image of the hunky guy with the wrench bent over, the famous powerhouse mechanic shot of Lewis Hine's labor series? Well, we have the outtakes. So we not only have the four or five other guys who were posing for this and didn't make the final cut, we also have that exact gentleman with his Y unbuttoned. So for the final shot that we see that we actually have on one of the books of our collection, the Lewis Hine Powerhouse Mechanic, we also have the outtakes in the collection. And that's fun. That's another thing that's great about film and having the full archives.
No, it's an experience, and it's definitely worth traveling to Rochester to see a lot of the stuff, and especially to go to Eastman House and see what you guys are doing, because you can definitely spend more than a day there. What do you think is the right amount of time that someone needs if they're traveling from out of town to make Eastman House a location on their trip?
Well, you definitely want at least an hour in the house to take a tour. You can do cell phone tours in each room. You could have a guided tour with a docent, or you can have a headset tour. You want to tour the house to really understand the man. He was a fascinating man. He was in the top five philanthropists of his time. What he did for the world of imaging as well as through his big heart was just fascinating. And to be in his mansion, which is actually quite modest considering how wealthy he was, is very fun. And then to tackle some of the galleries, and then if you've made an appointment with an archivist and you want to look at some things in the collection, it really could be at least a half day's adventure, at least. And then if the weather's nice and you need to frolic in the gardens a little bit, tack on another hour for that. But if you're just coming to tour the house and the galleries and you're not going into the archives, a two-hour trip, and we're just about an hour from Niagara Falls. So you could really make a vacation out of it.
No, I think you need to spend a lot of time there. There's a lot of stuff to see. We were there for three quarters of a day and didn't even scratch the surface. So I think it's something you need to check into Rochester for about a week and hang out.
I like that. Okay, a whole week. Now, we know we have that much to look at, but you just keep coming back. Because it's true. I mean, if you truly are a photography and film buff, just the library alone, the artifacts at your fingertips, working with the librarian that she could bring out for you to see would be amazing. So the library collection, the camera collection, the photography collection. I mean, one thing that I very much, I just love knowing that all of these incredible treasures are being preserved properly, being cared for, and through the internet and books like the camera book are being shared with the world.
So how do people look at what you guys are doing? How do they join the museum? How can they see exactly what's going on? I know you guys have an excellent award-winning video podcast series that shows off a lot of the work. But how do people get involved with what you're doing?
Well, the best thing to do is visit eastmanhouse.org, see the different membership levels. Also, just poke around a little on the website and get an idea of some of the work. Check out the commons at Flickr to see some samples of the collections that we're sharing on that site. You can get involved at any level you like, supporting us monetarily or just being a fan. Just signing up for our e-blast, just letting us know you're interested in finding out what we're doing. Check out our blogs, our podcasts, and it was very nice of you to give us that plug. We won gold from the American Association of Museums for top museum podcast in the country for 2009, and we're very proud of that. So you can see background story on the lunar orbiter and a background story in the vaults on Lewis Hine. So right via our website, you could check out the podcast. And the word podcast might scare people, but really all they are is just mini documentaries that you can watch on your computer. You don't have to have an iPod or an iPhone. So it's just another way to experience the collections at George Eastman House if you can't make the trek to Rochester.
So true. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today. This is a great work you guys are doing at the George Eastman House. It's just incredible, really. I think people need to experience themselves firsthand. And we're going to be having other people on here from your great organization talking about what they're doing with the collections and the preservation efforts and these old historic processes. And this is just beautiful work you guys are doing.
Thank you. We're so looking forward to talking with you more, Scott. Thank you so much.
Dresden, thank you. There you go. Dresden Engel, Public Relations Manager with George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film. Great stuff going on with the George Eastman House. You guys really need to be involved. Definitely check out their website. A lot of great stuff going on over at George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film. The Inside Analog Photography radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Chipper, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.